Hey, everybody. This is Rob Ryersey, alongside producer Dan Dietrich.
Hey, hey.
I am, as Doug Padgett would say, somewhere outside Fayetteville, Arkansas, more specifically Springdale, Arkansas, in my home office. And Dan, you're in South Bend, Indiana, in
That's
the
right.
garage?
It's a studio off the garage, back of the garage nice. Studio. So,
would love to know where you are. Drop a comment in the comments section. Let us know where you are. And Doug Padgett, our fearless leader, is in Washington D.C. He's participating in some actions to stop the death penalty and to encourage the Biden administration to demolish the death chamber that exists in Terre Haute, Indiana. And so, you know, we wish Doug well in all of that and his travels. He's got some interesting meetings today. We could tell you who he's meeting with and where he's at, but I don't think we're at liberty to do that, right?
we'll see if he records any of these interviews, and maybe we'll get to share them. I don't know.
Yeah, and he might, depending on how his schedule goes, he might pop in here at the end of the podcast, say hello, and give us a little report from D.C. Yeah. But
and while he was in D.C., part of what they were doing is getting arrested. They got arrested yesterday for blocking traffic with a giant sign that said "Stop Executions." And it was all a planned thing to draw attention to the need to abolish the death penalty. But that's what he's been doing.
I'll tell you what I've been doing. Have you been doing this? Are you into Wordle?
Are you
down this Wordle rabbit hole? I mean, I'll leave the NFT rabbit hole aside for a minute. we don't have to talk about that one. Though anybody interested, you know, shoot me a message. We can have a conversation.
Yeah, because Rob makes NFTs. I'll just plug
NFT
it for
creator.
You.
Oh, thank you. There we go. NFTs for the common good.
I'm deep into the Wordle wormhole.
Oh my goodness.
Wordle hole.
For a few days I was seeing people post this Wordle thing. I think, you know, friend of the podcast, Brian Berghoff, he was the first one I saw, and I'm like, what is this? This is weird. And then, you know, I Googled it. I tried it, and every day it's like the first thing I do in the morning. Yeah. I know I shouldn't pick up my phone first thing in the morning. I know that. I understand that. I believe in science, which is why I wear a mask, but I don't always practice what I believe, which is why I pick up my phone first
Even
thing in the morning.
Even though it trains your brain to receive those endorphins.
It's bad. It's bad. I know. But I do. I grab my phone and immediately play Wordle. And
I'm glad, though, that it's once a day. You solve the puzzle or you fail, and you've got to move on with your life after that.
Yeah. And I had, you know, big back-to-back issues. 2 days ago, I failed.
Oh, no.
And yesterday, I got it in the second try.
Wow. Congratulations.
So it was, you know, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat right there in a two-day span with Wordle.
Hey, what's your go-to opening word?
Raise.
Raise.
R-A-I-S-E.
Okay. You're going for the vowels.
Yeah. And, you know, the R and the S are real common. What's your first word?
Party.
Party.
Yeah. No like real it. Reason. Just party.
Yeah,
but
I'm trying to.
It worked out today. I got it.
Yeah, I'm trying to suss out the vowels as quickly as I can. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Anybody else? Are you into Wordle? Would love to see your Wordle scores for the day posted in the comments. Doug is going to be back on. He's going to be like, what is this?
What is that?
Well, listen, this is the politics podcast here on Vocom. It is not the online fad game of the week podcast. It is it's the politics podcast. We're going to talk about some politics. We're going to talk about some of the news of the day, some things that are happening. Frankly, we're going to be talking about some utter ridiculousness and some really important stuff because that seems to be our political system at this point. Half the time, maybe more than half the time, it is just bizarre. We're shaking our heads like, what in the world is going on? How is this happening? And then other times we are, you know, just feeling deeply how tremendously important some of this stuff is. And so, you know, that's what we're going to cover today. We're going to talk about some of the news of the day give some commentary on it and talk about the political implications of it. And we would Denise. Thank you, Denise. So fantastic. Coming in there, look at that. Hey, no shame in getting it on the sixth try. That's awesome. That's great. Thank you, Denise. You made my day. It's so great. And I also, the other thing that you, that Wordle lets you know, I don't know if you, we're deep down that people are just turning off the podcast in droves right now. The other thing that Wordle lets you know is which of your friends uses dark mode on their phones and which don't. Because for when you get the Wordle thing, if you use dark mode, I think this is the case. The missed boxes are in black. And if you don't use dark mode, the missed boxes are in white.
Wow.
Little, I think that's the case. Listen, let's talk politics. And the really important stuff, like who is going to be Donald Trump's running mate in 2024. it's not going to be Mike Pence. I think we can be, I think we're very certain about that. When Donald Trump runs again for president, and, you know, he's held another one of his campaign rallies, but Donald Trump is talking not about, you know, his vision for the future of the country, how he wants to make America great again, he's not talking about that. At his rallies, he's talking about how the election was stolen from him, and the big lie, and all this election fraud, and the ridiculousness of it. But that's not what his fans are talking about. His fans are talking about, you know, these big Trump supporters. They're talking about how they want Donald Trump's running mate in 2024 to be John F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, I need a full-on explainer. Like, how did this even get started? This obsession with JFK Jr. and he's going to come back. And
you know, this is totally one of those QAnon conspiracies. This is one of those things that you know, Richard Watkins put out there to try to drive traffic to his 8chan website. You know, for those of you that aren't familiar with that, you know, I think that Richard Watkins is QAnon. And, took over the QAnon account to simply drive traffic to his own website and, you know, giving people a reason to come there to find out, to read the Q drops. And so one of the crazy things they came up with was, John F. Kennedy Jr.'s actually alive and he, is going to join Donald Trump. They're going to be this amazing unity ticket that is going to bring the country together. And you know, there was like a big thing in Dallas, you know, back, I don't know, a couple months ago where
people
they were
like
expecting
standing outside waiting for him to like
appear.
Walk out of a building.
Yeah, it didn't happen. And they're like the 17th seems to, and I don't know why this is, but the 17th seems to be some big thing. So yesterday was a big day with this thought that like it could happen yesterday. It's just, Dan, this is utter ridiculousness.
And I mentioned this before the show, but I really wonder like what is the number of people that buy into this? Is it like... Mm-hmm. 100 people scattered across the internet? Is it 100,000? Is it millions? I have no concept.
I mean, I've got friends who pay attention to this stuff pretty closely. And, you know, there's estimates. For instance, I mean, we do training with candidates where we talk about with people running for office. And we talk about shift in values that has happened over the last several years. And one of our trainers, who is pretty well versed, he talks about how it could be up to 30% of Americans have had this kind of shift in their values towards authoritarianism. And, you know, the Trump obsession, the QAnon conspiracies all go along with it. And it's just terrifying. Just terrifying.
Yeah, it's wild. I don't know what to do with it because facts don't seem to matter or penetrate. I think that's something people have to come to grips with. Like, you're not going to logic your way out of this in an argument.
And, you know, I think I mentioned on the podcast last week that I am reading Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart. And she talks about this idea of people who are in cults and the real true believers when, like, the cult prophecies don't come true.
That's right.
They double down. Mm-hmm. And so every time JFK Jr. doesn't appear because he passed away in a plane crash a couple decades ago, every time he doesn't appear, these folks are going to double down and their loyalty to Trump becomes greater. So, you know, as we think about Trumpism and its continuing effect in our country and our political system, this is something that we've got to realize is a really scary reality, that that this kind of delusional conspiracy thinking is going to be manifest. And sometimes it's the crazier, the better. You know, something else that we learned from Trumpism, something that is a telltale sign of Trumpism, and that is projection. You know, projection is when you accuse other people of the very thing that you were doing. And we used to have a podcast called This Guy's Got to Go. It was kind of the precursor to the Vote Common Good Politics podcast. Mm-hmm. And it was a podcast devoted completely to the ridiculousness of Donald Trump and during his presidential administration, urging him to resign, urging him to be impeached and removed from office, and urging voters to do what they ultimately did and not reelect him. And one of the things we talked about often is that Donald Trump was really kind of the king of projection, that he would tell us exactly what he is doing by accusing his opponents of doing it. Right. He would that's what projection is you accuse you accuse others of doing the very thing that you were doing. Mm-hmm. You project onto them your own behavior, your own thoughts, your own motivations, all like it's projection. And so, you know, it was a classic thing we saw over and over and over again throughout the Trump administration. And you know, one of the things that Trump Republicans talk about often is how the census could be used to cheat the system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't, like this sense of like people who are here illegally, I'm using air quotes for those of you that are listening on the podcast instead of watching on Facebook, people that are undocumented here in the US and like they could get counted and like it, you know, this is going to be a, you know, a boondoggle for the Democrats and the sense. And there was this whole sense of like, you know, we could cheat the system somehow. And the census was going to be a way to do that. Mm-hmm. It turns out that it wasn't Democrats trying to cheat the system with the census. And you remember there was like these court challenges to the census process that caused it to be delayed, which, you know, like there's all these trickle effects. We'll talk about redistricting here in a moment, but that's one of the redistricting has gotten delayed because the census was delayed, and it's all this stuff because the Trump administration was projecting onto Democrats that they were up to shenanigans with the census. And it turns out that the Trump administration was trying to manipulate the census process for their own political gain.
I am shocked.
See, what happens here is like you can, the census triggers two things. It triggers redistribution or reapportionment, which is which states have more congressional representatives than others. And then based on population. And so states that have population growth get additional congressional districts, and states that have population shrinkage get fewer. They get, you know, get congressional districts get reapportioned. And then based on that reapportionment, then all the lines get redrawn, and we're in the process of that happening now. Mm-hmm. So what could happen is states that are red, there would be a strong desire for Republicans to get more people in those states to get them reapportioned to have more congressional seats. And states that are blue, we would want to move people out of those states. So that they have fewer seats. And so, you know, what the manipulation could be in this case is, you know, manipulating the population numbers so that it is advantageous for Republicans. And so, you know, you end up with, for instance, New York, Illinois, California, reliably blue states, fewer congressional seats, losing seats. Texas, North Carolina, picking up congressional seats. And so, you know, as like, I'm not saying necessarily that that happened because of the Trump administration's interference, but we know now that the Trump administration was interfering and we wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting is that as this redistricting is taking place, you know, there's those of you that listen to the podcast often know that I am terrified about the prospects for Democrats in 2022, the midterm elections. Mm-hmm. You know, Doug is very optimistically predicted that Democrats are going to hold the House, and fingers crossed that he's right, but I'm not holding my breath. And one of the reasons why has been this redistricting process, the reapportionment, the redistricting, and how with districts being gerrymandered, as they call it. And again, as Doug's fond of saying, the reason it's called gerrymandering is because kind of the first time it was done, the guy who benefited, his name was Jerry, and the district was drawn to look a little bit like a salamander. So they called it gerrymandering. That's the etymology of the word gerrymandering, which is hilarious. But so those of you, and this is like the pause the brakes. Maybe things aren't as bad as we thought they were. Things could be maybe all right here. As redistricting has been taking place, it's actually been benefiting Democrats a little bit more than expected. Actually, you know, one of the things that that this study from Politico on redistricting shows is that, you know, strong Biden districts are up to 127, which is a gain of 4 districts since 2020, while strong Trump districts have actually gained 13, but are only up to 99. The downside of this is this idea that there are going to be fewer and fewer competitive districts, that these districts are being drawn by both parties to either be blue or be red. And the idea of there being competitive congressional races is something that's going to be, you know, going by the wayside. So, you know, now we're, according to this analysis, 42 competitive districts, which is a decrease in 15 from 2020. So as it turns out, we could get to the point where it's just a few congressional districts that matter in terms of who controls the House. And so this is going to be something to watch.
Yeah. Rob, do you happen to know any of the history? Like, why are districts drawn the way they are to begin with? Like, why aren't districts just mapped according to like county lines or something like that?
Yeah, it's based on population numbers. There's supposed to be an equal distribution of population. And so as population areas grow, districts get smaller because it's trying to have an equal number of citizens. I think it was supposed to be something like there was supposed to be one congressperson for every, I think it's like 175,000 citizens. And if that were the case, Congress wouldn't, if like we had stuck with right. that, Congress would now be like over 2,000 people because mm-hmm. population growth. And so I don't know what the exact number is now, but they try to it gets balanced by population. So for instance, you know, where I live, there's been significant population growth here in Northwest Arkansas. And so Arkansas's third congressional district is actually getting smaller. And so they draw the lines because they've got to move. You got to get like 20,000 people from that district into this district. Mm. And so that's why you get like the crazy lines being drawn.
And then the party in power gets to redraw those lines. Is that correct?
Well, it varies by state. Each state is responsible for drawing the lines in their state. That's why some of us actually think that this should be taken over by the federal government, because these are because this is, you know, issues of federal elections, but every state is responsible to do it itself. Some, it's completely up to the legislature. Some, the legislature and the governor have to work together on it. Some have an independent commission. Some have an independent commission that has to be approved by the legislature. Some has the legislature makes a recommendation and then voters have to vote on it. Mm-hmm. It's
all over them.
Yeah. There's no, kind of uniform way that it is laid out.
Mm-hmm.
So like you get crazy things that happen. I mean, Ohio, a federal court has thrown out the map that was proposed in Ohio. Back in 2020, North Carolina's map was thrown out about 6 weeks before the election. And it was mad dash scrambling because people were running for office. And then all of a sudden, like the district, like the lines got redrawn 6 weeks before the election. and like districts people were running in didn't exist anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah,
that's wild. Yeah. So, yeah. So it's an absolutely crazy thing and it's something to watch.
Yeah.
Speaking of gerrymandered districts, one of the most gerrymandered districts is one in South Texas, the Houston area, kind of north of Houston. I actually saw somebody describe it today, actually, as the district looks like a man bending over backwards. That district, I think it's, I can't remember the number now off the top of my head. And like, you ever watch West Wing where they're able to like, just like very snappy, like know the congressional districts and who's there and boom, 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 boom. Yeah, that's dialogue written by Aaron Sorkin. Which is why they know that. I'm talking about Dan Crenshaw, the congressman from north of Houston. We talked about him. Was it last week we talked about him getting in a little bit of a tiff with
he's in a little feud
with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Mm-hmm. It feels like the wheels are coming off here for Dan Crenshaw. He was one of these guys that was like that came in as a Trump Republican, a big supporter of Trump. He's the one with like the crazy video of him like, you know, jumping out of a plane and, you know, acting like a Captain America. And he was one of those people that we thought was part of the, hey, look at there. Yeah, there's his district.
There's the map.
Yeah. Look at that. Producer Dan producing on the show. It doesn't look so much like a man bending over backwards to me. It looks like I see an old man's face, like above the Highlands and then like a big pointy head and a neck and he's kind of hunched over and maybe sitting with his feet dragging down there into Houston. I don't know.
It is a wild shape though. Like it's like a crazy U with some boxes attached upside down.
But we thought Dan Crenshaw was going to be solidly in the Bizarro squad, right? Like we thought he was like, he would have been that person that we thought was going to be right alongside Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and, you know, in the Bizarro squad. And it turns out he's not. And it turns out that the wheels are coming off in terms of his political influence. Last week, he's fighting with Marjorie Taylor Greene on Twitter. This week, he's fighting with a teenage girl at a open house. Dan, do you want to play this great footage?
Yeah, we'll play the footage. It's, well, great is debatable because they go from vertical format to horizontal, but of course it doesn't. It's a side note, but
folks, you should know how to use Zoom by now. Number one. Number two, you should know by now that if you're taking a video, you can't change the orientation in the middle of the video. It's not gonna work. Don't do that.
Shift. Yeah.
Just stick with it and live with the results. Don't be turning your phone mid-video. It doesn't work the way you think it does.
But the audio is great. So podcast.
Yeah. Here we go.
You're in for it.
To give context to anyone who hasn't heard, Crenshaw said, quote, "The most important thing here is that we have hero archetypes that we look up to. Jesus is a hero archetype. Superman is a hero archetype. Real characters, too. I could name 1,000. Rosa Parks, Ronald Reagan," end quote. I can't wrap my head around this.
Well, I'll help you. Put a period out of the word Jesus and don't question my faith.
Wow.
Again, that's
to a 10-year-old girl. Way to go, guy.
There's...
You moron.
Look.
Yeah.
yeah, you don't
talk to a kid like that.
Don't question my faith. You guys can ask questions about all of these things, and I will answer them. But don't question my faith.
I can question your faith if this is what you said.
That's... I mean, you can read the quote again. But nowhere in that quote am I saying Jesus is not real. That's a ridiculous statement. Of course he's the Son of God. Of course he's the Son of God, and of course he's real.
You can't say two different things. You can say that on a podcast, and you can say this here.
On the podcast, nobody would have understood it that way. I think you're twisting it that way. Which is not very Christian. Which is not very Christian.
Let's go, Brandon!
Let's go, Brandon!
It's not. And I'm not going to have my faith question. I'm not going to have my faith question.
Okay, this is fascinating on so many levels.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Okay, so Dan Crenshaw was on a... was on a podcast, and for some reason they were talking about hero archetypes, and he says Jesus was a hero archetype, Superman was a hero archetype, and then he says, and I could name, you know, 1,000 real ones, like Rosa Parks or Ronald Reagan. And what it sounds like he's saying is Jesus is a fictional character, like Superman is a fictional character, not a real person like Rosa Parks and Ronald Reagan were real people. That's like the content of what he said and an explanation of it. Now, that doesn't seem like that's what he meant.
Right.
Maybe that's actually what he really believes, and he is just unnuanced in his ability to talk about it. Maybe he didn't realize that, you know, Christian voters would be a certain brand of Christian voters would be real honed in on and sensitive to how you talk about that kind of stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's just a slip of the tongue. You know, we all do it when you talk, like stuff comes out in a way that you didn't mean, but he doesn't say, hey, listen, I totally understand why, like, this would be, like, unclear. I completely misspoke. Let me be really clear. I think Jesus is a real person, and Superman is not. And I think Jesus is the Son of God who died for our sins, and go into that. He doesn't say that in a very calm, understanding way. He gets really defensive with a teenage girl.
Who asks the question not aggressively, but just, I want some answers to this. And really, it was an opportunity to just say, yeah, that sounded different, but in the context, this is what I meant.
When someone is that defensive, I think that's an indication that something's going on. Something's going on inside. Something's going on in their life. Something's happening that is causing them to not respond and react in a rational way. I feel like Dan Crenshaw feels like the wheels are coming off here. And it's a bizarre thing to watch, to see him act so defensively, and respond so poorly to a question from a teenage girl at a town hall. And then to hear, you know, the crowd really take her side and turn on him and begin chanting, "Let's go, Brandon," as if like Dan Crenshaw is aligned with Joe Biden. Come on. This is Dan Crenshaw we're talking about. He's not aligned with Joe Biden. So, you know, we've talked about how in the past on previous podcasts, we've talked about this idea. I grew up in fundamentalism, and fundamentalism has this way of kind of turning on itself where you keep separating, you keep pulling away from people until you're pretty much all by yourself because nobody is pure enough. Nobody has the right doctrine. Nobody's doing it right enough. And I see that same thing happening here with this kind of, you know, Trumpist approach to politics that like the people that should be allies are no longer allies. They're turning on each other. And that's happening here with Dan Crenshaw and not just his supporters, but within the party too. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
I think they've created a monster and now it's devouring what used to be the most conservative of the conservatives, but now it's pushing people even further to the right.
So I'm shaking my head at Dan Crenshaw. You know who else I'm shaking my head at?
Neil Gorsuch.
Neil Gorsuch. That's excellent guess. Have you heard this story? Have you seen this? This is infuriating.
Yeah.
So Sonia Sotomayor has diabetes. She's a Supreme Court justice. She has diabetes. And as such, she is at high risk for the coronavirus. And Chief Justice John Roberts has asked all of the justices on the Supreme Court to wear masks out of deference to Sonia Sotomayor. And Neil Gorsuch said, nah, not gonna. He's refusing to wear a mask when the Supreme Court gets together, putting Sonia Sotomayor at risk. So... and this is the infuriating part, the most infuriating part to me. Sonia Sotomayor now has to attend Supreme Court proceedings via Zoom while Neil Gorsuch gets to sit there. I think Neil Gorsuch needs to be the one who ought to be on Zoom.
Yeah.
And Sotomayor ought to be able to you know, be in the chambers.
You don't want to do the bare minimum. You can Zoom in.
This guy.
And I can't imagine having to go back to work eventually with a guy that cares so little for your health and safety that he won't wear a piece of cloth on his face when he sits right next to you. Just blows my mind. And I can't imagine, like, how do you look that person in the face?
Yeah, I mean, Neil Gorsuch, are you literally trying to kill your colleagues? Because that, like, you know, we talk about judicial temperament and having, you know, the judicial temperament, you know, to sit on the Supreme Court. And, you know, Neil Gorsuch needs to be someone with this kind of judicial temperament who's going to act reasonably and rationally and evaluate things according to logic and facts and law, not according to emotion. And he's a baby who can't put on a mask?
And the fact that there's no repercussions.
None.
Very frustrating.
Oh, it's enough to make you want to pull your hair out. Listen, there is one really important political thing that's happening this week, and that is Democrats today are moving ahead with a debate on voting rights and the voting rights bill that would protect the ability of millions of Americans to cast their ballot. And this is, you know, tremendously important piece of legislation that is not going to pass. And it's not going to pass because it's going to be filibustered by the Republicans. And so, you know, there's a sense of like, hey, let's carve out some filibuster exception for legislation that has to do with voting rights, so that we can pass this thing with 51 votes. And there's two Democrats, you know their names, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who are standing in the way of that and saying, no, we're not going to do this. So, you know, on the one hand, there's kind of this, the conventional wisdom is you don't bring a bill to the floor in either the House or the Senate to debate it if you know you're going to lose, because that's, you know, just bad politically. You don't do it until you know you got the votes to pass it. I actually think that this is a really good move on the part of Chuck Schumer and Senate Democrats. I think it's a really good move because it's going to put much needed and continued pressure on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. I don't think they're going to crack under that pressure, unfortunately, but that pressure is going to continue. And it also is going to force everybody to go on the record. And I think that's really important. So there's kind of two things wrapped up in this. One is the filibuster. And should voting rights legislation be exempted from the filibuster? And then the second thing is like the voting rights bill itself. So first, the filibuster. I mean, this whole idea that the filibuster is sacrosanct, that can't be adjusted, it can't be touched, is ridiculous. You know, it's not been around forever. It's not in the Constitution. It's not in the Constitution. And there are plenty of exceptions to the filibuster. And, you know, one count is something like there's 160 different exceptions to the filibuster. Including in that are confirmations of the Supreme Court can't be filibustered, only need 51 votes to confirm a Supreme Court justice, pass a budget bill, raising the debt ceiling, confirming cabinet nominees. All of these things can be done with 51 votes. You don't need 60 votes to end the, you know, the cloture to cloture vote to end the debate and move forward with voting up or down on the bill, which is what the filibuster prevents. There are all of these understandable exceptions. Something as important as preserving the voting rights of Americans, making sure protections are in place, ought to be filibuster proof. They need to make an exception. And so I'm really glad that Chuck Schumer is going to hold Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema's feet to the fire and make them defend their pro-filibuster stance.
Yeah.
I'm also really glad that they're going to hold Republicans' feet to the fire and force them to go on the record saying they don't support voting rights.
But here's the thing with the filibuster, they won't have to go on record, correct? All they do is they send a note to the parliamentarian and they just say, yeah, we're not doing this, that's filibustered. True. And so they don't have to say anything.
That's true. But they will, I think, in the debate, I think, you know, they'll probably go on record during the debate.
Yeah.
You know, they won't, the debate will never end on voting rights, which is what cloture does. It ends the debate and the filibuster keeps the cloture vote from taking place. Yeah. And you're right. It's not like Mr. Smith goes to Washington where someone has to, you know, stand and talk for hours on end to keep the debate from ending. It can just be like literally sending an email saying,
yeah,
hey, I kind of feel filibustery today. And you know, and that's all it takes.
Yeah.
It is absolutely ridiculous. You know, but at the same time, protecting voting rights, really, really important.
Yeah.
And I got to guess that the vast majority of senators and their teams yesterday, you know, posted quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Uh-huh. talking, you know, about his legacy and our unity as a country and blah, 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 you know, everybody trying to appropriate that. And you know what Dr. King's family was doing yesterday, Dan? You do know.
I do know because I pulled this article. They were were marching for voting rights. Dr. King's family, the people carrying on his legacy, feel so strongly about voting rights that they chose his holiday to march for voting rights. For all the people posting the cute quotes and the whitewashed history, the feel-good stuff, voting rights was at the heart of what Dr. King stood for and marched for and was arrested for and beaten for. And that's why so many people are continuing that work today. And I hope a couple Democrat senators hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I do too. Well, listen, Dan, let's say hello to the folks in the chat. Rachel in Ohio. Rachel, let me know if you're a Browns fan. I grew up in Cleveland. Ohio boy. Denise, we already talked to you about her Wordle. Great job, Denise, getting it today. Valerie uses dark mode. Awesome. Terrell, you know, is saying bless their hearts. I think Terrell was talking about the
the JFK Jr.
The JFK conspiracy theory. yep. Tammy thinks they're crazy, totally with her. Katrina is talking about the denial of pain being the root of illusion, and absolutely some real key observations there, Katrina. Thank you for that. Sue, what about those in districts who are not voters? Do they count in the districting? Yes, they do. They do. It's based on total population, not just voters. Dave wants to know, are we doomed as Americans?
This is something I ask myself every day. Every dumb thing that I see in the news, and every way that, like, people are just not willing to do the basic bare minimum to care for their neighbors and do anything outside of their immediate well-being and perceived freedoms. I don't know how we get past that. I see a lot of tweets like, I don't know how to make you care about other people.
Sandy says we are doomed if they succeed at taking our voting rights away. Yeah, yeah. Excellent point, Sandy. Thank you for that. You know, Rachel makes the point that Republicans did amend the filibuster to get their Supreme Court justices. Absolutely. That happened. Donna, not just taking our voting rights away, but the suppression that changes outcome. That's right. And Rachel is an OSU fan, too. OH, Rachel. There's a little OH coming your way, you know what to do. So, Dan, you're probably just shaking your head there as a Notre Dame fan, but
yeah,
you know,
get behind me, Satan.
Well, listen, everybody, thanks for being along today. It's good to have a conversation. Yeah, Rachel comes through with the IO. I love it. Great to have a conversation with you today. Thanks for being a part of it, and we will be back next week to talk about politics. Is there a faith conversation happening tomorrow, Dan?
I think there is. Yeah. So we'll
awesome.
We'll see you later this week.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.